Let us begin with the wand. When you can't reach something that you want, what do? You use a piece of wood or something similar to extend your reach. That is what a wand does. It extends your will towards something or someone. It has no will of its own. It just conducts your will from point A to point B. This is how you make a wand. There are certain woods that hold and conduct power better than others. If you have been reading Robert Graves' book, The White Goddess, mentioned in the first session, you will know about the 12 trees that were seen as special by the Druids. Among them are the oak, hazel, hawthorn, holly, ash, and rowan, all of which are suitable for a wand. There are different species of oak, and any of them can be used. Some of these trees may not grow in your area. Some are not native to the land, but they or a near substitute can be found if you look. Search for a sacred site or a place of quietness and peace where trees have been undisturbed for many years. Move among the trees, feel their energies. One may draw you more than the rest. Look among its smaller branches, find one that is straight and strong. It needs to be between 16 and 22 inches long and about as thick as the base of your forefinger. Measure the length you need, but leave at least 2 or 3 inches from where it connects with the tree, so that the tree can heal itself once the branch has been cut. Mark off the length with a pen, then sit beneath the tree and connect with its life force. Picture the branch and visualize the life force running through it like a ribbon of light. Ask permission to take the branch and offer a blessing in return. Now go away and allow the tree to prepare itself. You do not hack off a branch any more than you would hack off a finger. Return when the moon is growing to the full, and with a sharp knife, take the branch with as few cuts as possible. Do not use a saw. Strip as much as you can of the bark and extra twigs off the branch and bury them beneath the tree so it goes back into the root system. Bury a silver coin beneath the tree and give an offering of water. The wood must dry out naturally, so putting it in a warm, dry place will help. Take off every bit of bark and cut away any large knots or protuberances, and then begin to smooth it down using a coarse sandpaper and gradually progress to a finer one. When the wand is smooth, oil it and leave it for a week or so until the oil has been absorbed. You may have to do this several times before the wood shows a smooth, shiny surface. But now you can either varnish it or just polish it. It needs no embellishments. But if you absolutely must put something on it, use a small crystal point. Bore a hole in the top of the wand and fit it in tightly using a strong glue. Wrap it in silk and put it away to await consecration. Now we turn to the sword. This is obviously more difficult. It's almost impossible to make yourself unless you have the skill. However, there are now many places where they can be bought ready-made. Do not buy a second-hand sword. If someone you know well and respect offers you his or her sword, it may be all right to take and use it. But cleanse it and deconsecrate it first. If it has been named, you may want to rename it. A sword can be difficult to handle once it has been used by another. It will always be a weapon, and so will carry a portion of its owner's emotional power. If you know the former owner has a temper, then refuse the gift politely. If you are buying, look at different types. A two-handed broadsword is not suitable for a small temple, unless you want to find it stuck into the ceiling. It must be light enough to lift and wield easily, heavy enough to make you aware of its true nature. Reproductions of Excalibur and other famous weapons are nice to hang on a wall as an ornament. They are not suitable for your purpose. There is too much mythological baggage attached to the name and style. Choose a plain, serviceable weapon and mark it with your own personality. A sword has three names. The first is that given to it by the smith who made it, and is most likely to be simply a style number. The second name is the one that you give to it. The third is the secret name known only to the sword itself. It may, eventually, pass it on to you at a later date. Never ask for it. It must be a gift. The name you give should be more of a description of its destiny, work, or nature in your hands. Think about it carefully and don't rush it. Every now and then, oil the blade lightly and keep it covered when not in use. Hang it on the southern wall of the temple, where it can act as a silent guardian. When in use, it is an extension of your power to defend, destroy, and command. This means you need to keep a watch on your temper and anger levels. No matter where you are in relation to the temple, the sword may respond and manifest astrally in your hand if your temper rises to flashpoint.